A-M-O-C-O, Amoco. Amoco presents Edward R. Murrow with the news. Parlor magic starts with the command, take a number. Of course, that's just a trick. But you get real magic when you take this number, Amoco 586. For Amoco 586 is a special upper cylinder lubricant that works magic on any engine. Your Amoco man mixes Amoco 586 with the fuel in the tank. It goes with the fuel into the cylinder where it lubricates valves, frees them from sticky carbon. Ask your Amoco man about Amoco 586. He'll tell you it's magic for motors. And now, Edward R. Murrow with the news.
This is the news. General Walker, our top field commander in Korea, says the day of retreat is past. In a series of talks to men at the front, the general said, "We will go forward within a short period of time. I feel a definite weakening of the enemy. He is even pulling back in some places. I am sure," said General Walker, "that once we punch through the thin crust, the enemy will fold up." The general's second optimistic statement in 2 days came as American troops continued to advance north of Daegu. South Koreans, with American support, made more progress in the same general area. A combined American-South Korean force, commanded by Brigadier General Gard Davidson, former West Point football player and coach, trapped some 3,000 of the enemy in the Pohang area. The Air Force reports hitting 6 more new Russian-made Yak planes on the ground in North Korea. And the 5th Air Force says that in the past 12 days, our fighter planes have destroyed 71 Russian-made North Korean tanks and damaged another 73. They've been using a new technique, firing 8 rockets at their targets at one time. In the past, they fired rockets singly or in pairs. Here in New York, the big 3 foreign ministers discussed German questions all day. They'll continue tomorrow. Spokesmen for all 3 delegations deny reports that they are deadlocked on the German rearmament problem. The ministers had hoped to finish their business tomorrow. An official spokesman says they may have to meet again on Monday. In Heidelberg, General Mark Clark, the commander of our field forces, said the combat readiness of our soldiers in Europe is superior. Also in Germany, Dr. Hallmar Schacht, once Hitler's economic minister, was found not guilty at his 4th trial on charges that he was a Nazi. A German court ruled he was not even a Nazi follower, accepted his argument that he was a member of the anti-Hitler underground. Throughout Western Europe today, the American Information Service distributed a white paper accusing Russia of inciting border tension with her neighbors, particularly with Yugoslavia. The paper says that within less than a month after the Yalta conference, Russia abandoned the limited cooperation with the West that existed during the war. In Britain today, Minister of Economic Affairs Hugh Gaitskell told the House of Commons, the British rearmament program will mean continued and perhaps new price controls. He indicated that Britain is not ready to go on an all-out war footing. He urged firms that manufacture export goods not to delay their production without first checking with the government, even if they get military orders. Mr. Gaitskell also had an answer for critics who charge that the British are not keeping pace with the United States on economic controls. He said, what the United States is now contemplating, for the most part, already exists in Britain. The New York Stock Exchange had a good day. Price levels went up to a new 4-year high. The experts say no particular news development has sent the market up. It's just that the business background is very favorable and prospects for the future are thought of as excellent. In the House of Representatives, the Democrats say they have more than 100 signatures on a petition urging Congress to stay on the job until action is taken on an excess profits tax. And 32 Republicans in the House have announced that they will vote against adjournment until Congress passes an excess profits bill. Senator Robert Taft says the present emergency requires only about 25% of the national effort. It's not the same as an all-out war. The Senate Foreign Relations Committee today approved the nomination of New York's resigned Mayor O'Dwyer to be ambassador to Mexico. Republican Senator Hickenlooper of Iowa just voted present. The committee also voted contempt citations against Earl Browder, Frederick Vanderbilt Field, and Philip Jaffe. All 3 refused to answer some questions during a subcommittee hearing on Senator McCarthy's charges of communism in the State Department. Democratic Senator McCarran says the president will sign the communist control bill passed by the Senate yesterday because, says the senator, American public opinion won't let him do otherwise. The president has said he will not sign the bill. The Polish government has protested to the State Department against what it calls the discrimination against the Polish liner Batory, the ship that took Gerhard Eisler to Europe. The Poles say, "We do not permit the Batory's crewmen to go ashore. We ask them tricky questions. We don't permit visitors on the ship. And we give it a special and prolonged Coast Guard inspection." The FBI says it has arrested 10 persons charged with being agents of a $2 million international lottery ring. The FBI says the lottery tickets had not yet been placed on sale in any quantity. In Pittsburgh today, government investigators heard testimony from the engineer of the Spirit of St. Louis, the Pennsylvania Railroad train that rammed into a stalled troop train in Ohio and caused the death of 33 Pennsylvania National Guardsmen. The engineer, William Eller, said his train was running late. He was trying to make up time. He failed to obey a slow signal. Put on his brakes, but not quick enough. He was going 50 miles an hour or more when he hit the troop train. The investigators also were told that the train carrying the soldiers was stalled because its steam line had broken for the second time on the trip from Pennsylvania. In New Hampshire, Senator Toby has won a close race in the Republican primary for another term in Washington. He said this is a victory for a forward-looking brand of republicanism. Mr. Truman has asked Congress to pass a law which will permit General Marshall to take over the job of Secretary of Defense. The Senate Armed Services Committee has approved by a vote of 10 to 2. Senators Noland and Kane voted against the measure on the grounds that they want control of the Defense Department to remain entirely in civilian hands. Chairman Tidings told the committee, "The president wants this exception for no other person, in no other circumstances, and at no other time." General Marshall told newsmen today, "Gentlemen, we are just where I came in 10 years ago." That was when he was named chief of staff. General George Marshall is approaching the not inconsiderable age of 70, the time of life when men like Winston Churchill and Field Marshal Smuts served their countries with vigor and brilliance. His appointment appears to have been generally welcomed, both at home and abroad. His stature, both as a military leader and a statesman, is enormous in Europe, where people will not soon forget the plan that came to bear his name. He was the real architect of our policy in China, where after prolonged negotiations, he made the basic decision that America should not participate in a Chinese civil war. A decision that will probably be argued about until the Chinese have another civil war, but a decision which, in the light of what's happening in Korea, seems perhaps to have been well advised. The general's record is too well known to merit repetition. His experience is probably more varied than that of any man in public life today. He has said, "I could never be drafted for any political office." He has, at the same time, demonstrated his willingness to serve his country without regard for personal profit or personal plans. Any reporter who covers international affairs for a few years meets many men whose names make headlines. General Marshall is one of the most impressive this reporter has ever met. And yet, impressive isn't exactly the right word. There seems to be an inner calm and assurance about the man that would probably communicate itself whether he were a general or a mechanic or a farmer. He can be direct and concise without being brutal. He holds himself erect, but with a loose rein. He can sit through a long speech or committee hearing without moving a muscle. No fidgeting, no doodling. But still, there is no tenseness about him. He can say, as he did to a congressional committee in the last war, "I presume all you gentlemen finish your day with the Lord's Prayer, as I do. But even then, my thoughts revolve around ship tonnage and transportation." After long arguments with the Russians in Moscow, he said, "We cannot compromise on great principles in order to achieve agreement for agreement's sake. Still, the patient is sinking. while the doctors deliberate, and we cannot await compromise by exhaustion. We must act without delay. General Marshall can reprimand the wandering and verbose informant by saying in that mild voice, "Would you mind repeating what you have just tried to say?" Once during the war, I flew back from Europe in an effort to get from General Marshall a decision on what I thought was a rather complicated matter, having to do with radio transmission from the front. I expected to find the general flanked by aides and signals officers. He received me alone in that big office in the Pentagon. The interview lasted perhaps 15 minutes. It quickly became clear that he knew more about the subject and what was involved than I did. He talked without notes or memoranda of any kind. At the end of the conversation, he did not refuse my request, because by that time, I had already withdrawn it. General Marshall is no orator, but like many Army men, he can mobilize and deploy words with telling effect. He once accepted a medal at the end of the war as the agent of those who made it possible for us to stand here today in peace and thanksgiving, the soldiers of the great American army of this war. You who faced death and swallowed fear, endured the agonies of battle and of hearts, torn by loneliness and homesickness and starvation for the normal life you love. As a country, we're committed to the proposition that the control of military affairs shall rest in civilian hands, and that is a proposition to which most of us appear to have subscribed. It is now clear that we are about to make an exception to that. The two key figures in our defense establishment will be five-star generals Marshall and Bradley. Both can work with the State Department and the department with them. I think it is possible that historians will decide that they were both a little more than life-size. This is Ed Murrow. I'll be back in a moment with the word for today. Now, here's Bob Dixon.
Do you remember the famous Glidden automobile tours of 40 to 50 years ago? Well, tomorrow, a lot of early model cars will complete the 1950 Glidden tour. They started from Lake Placid last Sunday, and they'll wind up in Rochester, New York tomorrow to help celebrate the 50th anniversary of the Automobile Club of Rochester. It's interesting to see these old cars, to compare them with today's fine, streamlined beauties. How did cars change from these old one-lungers clattering along the cobblestones to 1950s easy-riding, powerful machines? Well, one of the most important reasons was the development of better gasolines like Amoco Gas, the original special motor fuel. It led to the development of new, higher compression engines, to finer, easier riding cars. In all those years, there's been nothing like Amoco Gas. And in any car, 1905 one-cylinder roadster or 1950 convertible, there is still nothing like Amoco Gas. That's my word for today, and here's Mr. Murrow with his word for today.
I am told that this is General Marshall's favorite quotation. It's by Oliver Wendell Holmes. Man is born to act. To act is to affirm the worth of an end. And to affirm the worth of an end is to create an ideal. And General Marshall himself has said, "There are many who deplore, but few who are willing to act. Action depends upon conviction, and conviction in turn depends upon understanding." Good night and good luck.
When your Amoco man services your car, he doesn't just take one kind of grease and smear it here and there. No, sir, he follows factory specifications. He uses as many as 9 different kinds of Amoco-approved lubricants, and each is the exact grade specified by factory engineers. His Amoco-approved check chart shows him exactly where to lubricate every point. And that's why your Amoco man is such an expert in car servicing, and why cars serviced the Amoco way last so much longer on the road. Listen tomorrow. Tomorrow, this is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.